The first of the candidates for governor that came on this show last year was John Gregg, the Democrat running for governor. There was another guy running Republican for governor, but he couldn't get enough signatures. But he came in, had a great time. He just couldn't get enough signatures on his petition. And that's Jim Wallace. Wish him well, but, you know, it is what it is. We talked to the Libertarian candidates people today. Rupert, the one that's, you know, the survivor guy. And we extended an invitation. They said they're going to take us up on it. Mike Pence, the Republican candidate for governor, he keeps talking to us. Sure, every time we've talked to him, he says he's coming in the studio. He says he's coming in the studio. We're waiting on him. So I got Rupert going to come. Mike Pence still selling wolf tickets. John Gregg is here in the studio for the first hour taking your calls. He is the Democratic candidate for governor, and today he made some news trying to do something about $4.15, $3.99, whatever the price of gas is at 2 minutes after 1 o'clock on a Tuesday. And this is your opportunity, because some of you still think Mitch Daniels is going to be governor next year. Let me clue you in on something. At the end of the year, when Ryan Seacrest and Dick Clark says it's 2013, Mitch is done, over, finito, end. That's it. There will be a new governor. That individual's either going to be John Gregg, Mike Pence, or Rupert. Either one of the three. That's it. Mitch is gone, so this is your opportunity to find out where John Gregg stands on the issues. Everything from education to FSSA to hardworking state workers. Could they see a raise under John Gregg? Or is John Gregg going to get rid of state workers like it was the last year? Right to work, or getting rid of right to work, getting a state that works again, putting Hoosiers back to work, offender reentry, corrections, all of those things governors deal with. So this is your opportunity. And with that, we welcome the Democratic candidate for governor of Indiana, John Gregg. John, welcome.
Hey, it's great to be here. I think this is my third or fourth
third
visit.
Third or fourth, that's
third
correct.
Third or fourth visit, absolutely.
Given that it's spring break week, there are probably some people listening that have not heard you before. Why are you running?
You know, Amos, I'm running. I've got experience. I'm not a career politician, but I'm running because I think I can make a difference. I've got a background of bringing people together. We've got such opportunities in Indiana, but if we're going to fuss, we're going to fight, then these opportunities, we've got to make our schools better. These opportunities to take advantage and get more people to work in the field of energy, advanced manufacturing, life sciences, logistics, all of this is going to be lost unless we've got someone who can bring us together, work for a common ground, and move us forward. And I've got a record of doing that, whether it was when I was president of Vincennes University or when I was Speaker of the Indiana House. And that's solely and sorely missing in Washington, D.C. Broken system. We don't want that here. We don't want anything to do with Congress here. And we can do better in Indiana working and getting along. Everybody deserves a seat at the table.
Was up in 239-1310, 239-1310's afternoon's name was up in Lafayette and West Lafayette over the weekend, had not been in that community in a long, 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 long time. On one level, it looked like obviously things were doing well in Tippecanoe County. Saw the big Caterpillar plant on the highway. Obviously, they've got the Isuzu plant there. Purdue University is there. That helps the economy. But as I drove through the neighborhoods close to the river, those older homes, and John, I know you've been there, those older homes, I could have been in Lagodi. I could have been in other great little towns in our state, cities in our state where they don't have the Caterpillar factory. They don't have a 60,000-person university and all that economic development. And I looked at those houses that they kind of reminded me of some of the older neighborhoods of Indianapolis, and it's like, how do we redevelop those areas? How do we bring jobs back to the Brightwoods of the world, or the Brightwoods that are out in the other towns of Indiana? How would a Governor John Gregg do that?
Absolutely. And I don't view that as a challenge. I view that as an opportunity. Amos, we do some things in Indiana extremely well. One of them that we've done well, we are still the nation's leading manufacturing state. And we have what we call advanced manufacturing, which really just means leaner and meaner manufacturing. Maybe not as labor intensive, definitely a lot better educated, higher skilled. And we've got to do everything we can to continue on that. Let's put it like this. If we're going to make battery cars in this country, mm-hmm. let's make them in Indiana. If we're going to have those windmills on the road up to Chicago, up to your hometown, mm-hmm. let's make those aluminum blades in Indiana. Let's make that steel post in Indiana. If we're going to pump more natural gas, let's make that casing that you put the natural gas in at Indiana steel mills. If we're going to be doing that, let's make sure that that pump is made in Indiana. Let's make sure our schools are best to train and teach people. We can take advantage of all these. If we're going to take advantage of our just God-given lucky location in this mm-hmm. country, that's what location means, then we've got to be prepared for it. We've got to have good streets and bridges. We got to have a good way to get people to and from work, whether it's by bus, whether it's by rail. We got to be having some serious discussions on these things. The time for leadership is now.
239-1310, 239-1310 this afternoon's name is. You talked today about doing something with gas tax. What would you do?
Well, what we actually said was, and if you notice it, that that we're looking at it and that we're studying it, and that's exactly what we're doing. Mm-hmm. I think that any time you see gas get to this price, it tells me two things. First and foremost, since 1974, Congress and every president, Democrat and Republican, there's plenty of blame to go around, but Congress has consistently not ever adopted an energy policy in this country. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's a fail because Congress continues on. We have different presidents, but Congress right. continues on. That is a failed opportunity there, and they're doing nothing for it. The other thing is, if we're going to get our economy going and get these jobs in Brightwood and Ravenswood, and we're going to get them in Hallville, then we've got to have either gasoline that's affordable. We've got to have a means of getting these people to work. If you're making, you know, $8, $9, $10 an hour, and you're paying $4 plus for gas, that's an issue. We have got to attract not just jobs, good paying jobs. And that's real important. The jobs have to pay. And when I say a living wage, I don't mean eke and buy. I mean enough to have a home, buy a second car, help send a kid to college, be able to go take a couple of days off on a vacation and spend some time with the family. That's the type of jobs we have. And a governor can provide that leadership by having a good regulatory climate, a fair taxing system, and doing everything he can to promote Indiana as a place to expand your existing business or to relocate your business to.
Is part of it leveling with Hoosiers? I mean, before when gas went up, it was because we were importing so much oil from the Middle East. Now we are getting more oil from this country than we are importing from the sheiks of the Middle East. So the problem is people in India driving more, people in China driving more, driving up our price. Are there things we can do here in Indiana to increase our energy or hopefully find somebody go start digging and find some oil under their house?
Hey, there's two or three things. Number one, I mentioned if we're going to do electric cars, let's yeah. build them here. Number two, batteries. We've not even begun to scrape the surface of what a battery can do in powering different types of equipment, your home and all this. Purdue University is the leader, is one of the leaders in this. Not something real well known outside of that community possibly, or at least outside the minds of some techies. Those are two things we can do right away. The third thing, Indiana corn, Indiana soybeans, they make ethanol with it. And I just actually left a group of soybean and corn farmers on the west side. Indiana's 13 ethanol plants employ 629 people and indirectly employ another 2,900 people. And by and large, these are all jobs that have been created in the last 6 to 8 years.
239-1310, 239-1310. It's afternoon's Amos, or send me a text message at 85620, keyword Amos, or send me an email. Go to praiseindy.com. Let's start today with Katie. Hi there.
Hi, how are you guys? I like to see that when y'all do promotion for jobs to come to Indiana, that y'all put some time, like a 10-year clause, because these people have got so crafty. They're getting all the federal money. They're laying all workers off, bringing new workers in so they can get more federal money. So if y'all put something like a 5-year, 10-year clause when they hire people, they got to keep them on, and I think that'll narrow down the unemployment rate.
Great question, John Gregg. Reaction?
Yeah, they're called clawbacks, and she is absolutely right. There have been clawbacks in a lot of the provisions, but I understand not all of them have been enforced. If we in Indiana are willing to give abatements, willing to give incentives, willing to provide training dollars, and the company does not follow through with the number of jobs or the average salary, they need to be penalized. And penalized means financial penalty, and the money needs to come back to Indiana. And that's something I would do, absolutely.
Given, our friends across the street at Channel 13 have done 2 years, stories over the last 2 years of big jobs announcements where the governor of the day, you know, cuts not a ribbon, but just stands in front of an empty lot and says, jobs are coming here. And then 1, 2, 3, 4 years later, there is nothing here. What can a Governor Gregg do between the time somebody, if you're elected governor, somebody comes into your office and says, Governor, hey, we just signed a deal. Guy wants to come in here and bring 1,000 jobs. And then 2 years later, there's still, an empty field, an empty lot.
Well, I'm not, of course, running, as you mentioned, against Governor Daniels. My fight's not with him. But I think one thing that I would do as governor is I think you got to realize there's no Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. And I know that's not the thing to be telling your young listeners, but there's not a Santa Claus.
Or even the older listeners, too.
Okay.
As well.
But I think we have to ask the tough questions. So before, because everybody wants jobs. I mean, I'm nothing I'd like more, Amos, than to stand somewhere in Indiana and say we're going to have 100 or 5 or 10 or 1,000 new jobs, but we got to ask the tough questions going into it. We got to make sure we're not dealing with snake oil salesmen and flim-flam artists. So I think we got to ask the real tough questions up front. We've got to do some research. We don't need, if we're worried about getting the announcement out one day, wait sometimes 48 hours. Ask some more tough questions. I think we've got to do that, number one. But I think it's out there. I think we can continue. One thing our governor has done well, he has promoted Indiana around the country and overseas. We need to keep doing that. But we have got to be just as excited when that current business in Broad Ripple adds one new employee, or that small business in Linton, Indiana adds 2 employees, as when a new factory comes to town. We've got to do things to help our homegrown businesses expand.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Is back to the phones. And Larry, hi there.
How you doing, Amos and
hi.
John?
Hi, Larry.
It's so good to hear your voice.
Larry, how have you been?
I'm just fine.
Well, good. God bless you. I haven't talked to you in years.
Well, here I am. And, you know, I'm so glad to hear what you're talking. We're all in this together in the state of Indiana. If we don't have a governor that we can trust and that knows what's going on, then we don't have anything. So you're running a brilliant campaign, John Gregg, and I feel like you're going to be elected. So let's just keep it the way you're going now, talking about jobs and, of course, good jobs and not like the light box company.
Larry.
Yeah, we're still looking for those jobs.
Thank you, Larry.
It was good to hear you, John.
Thank you. 239-1310, 239-1310's afternoon's the name is. The Department of Child Services is when you served as Speaker of the House, that was not a Department of State Government that was folded in under FSSA. It has been a separate Department of State Government after a lot of abuses and children in foster care, children under the supervision of the of then FSSA just dying and just being mistreated. Now it's been 8 years since we've had a Department of Child Services, and still the kinds of questions that were raised before the department was created is being asked now. What would Governor Gregg do about this whole situation of how Indiana deals with children in crisis?
Amos, I wrote an article. I don't like to use the word promise because people think, oh, another politician promising. But I'll tell you, I wrote an op-ed piece that ran in some papers around the state, and I said the first thing I will do as governor, and I mean when we're elected Tuesday, the first thing we do Wednesday is convene a group of law enforcement officials, including the sheriffs, police chiefs, prosecutors, child advocates, judges, FSSA, DCS officials. You got to get them all together, public and private school people, parents, grandparents, docs and emergency room people. We got to get them together and figure out what to do, because right now we've been bragging that the state agency in charge of this has returned over $100 million to the state's coffers, and yet we've had over 20 children die. I will be candid. We can never stop every child from this type of abuse and death. But Amos, if we stop one, if we stop two, it can work better. You got call centers now where people call in. You know, where's the oversight? Where's the local control, the local involvement? This young man that was killed that the Star wrote about at Greensburg, his name was Devin Parsons. And when they wrote how there had been over 11 calls from local law enforcement, neighbors, and teachers within like a 5-month period, and nothing was done. And within 48 hours of this boy's last day of school, he was dead. That's wrong. That's wrong. And we cannot, if we do nothing, that's a sin. And we will, that's going to be priority starting right the day, the night we get elected. That next morning, we're dealing with that.
Do we have, as you have gone out campaigning across the state and have heard people talk about Child Protective Services and also talk about FSSA and other state agencies, do we have enough people to do the job to take care of the problem, or have we, or do we, does the next governor really have to look at, do we need to add people in those agencies and maybe conserve in some other part of state government?
Sure. The easy answer, of course, is to say to add people. I think what we've got to do, and this is what this group can help us do, is figure out what the responsibilities are, how we can better operate, and if we can operate it with the people we've got, great. Mm-hmm. If people need to be added, then it's got to be a priority. But I don't think we will know that until we have an opportunity to have all these people sit down and begin working. But for us to brag about returning money when we've got just child after child, case not being reported, nothing being done, is wrong, and that will stop.
Back to the phones and CL Day at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine.
Great to hear your voice. You know, under the Biden and Obama administration, I was the consultant for the state foster care program. And I wrote the first Indiana Foster Family Handbook. So I'm pretty aware of that program. And I had a agency that did foster care. One of the things that is going on in foster care is that kids are being put with relatives. More kids are with relatives, but they're not getting the support and services they need. They're being told that if they don't do this free, that they're going to remove the kids from them home. I really believe in relative care. So there is an undercurrent with DCS that there is so much going wrong with that agency. Oh. And it's not being reported. You know, the Internet for Star reported a month or so ago that there were about 7 kids that died, and the common denominator was DCS. Judge Payne over DCS is just like having a 5-star at the chicken coop. Yeah.
Let me tell you, Judge
Payne. All right, let me let John Gregg respond.
Judge Payne will be gone. I can tell you that. I mean, I don't like to make comments like that, but we've got problems in that agency. You know, they hung that around Joe Kernan's neck, and it hasn't gotten any better. And there will be new leadership in that department, I can assure you of that.
Is it also, because we've heard, John Gregg, this situation where, you know, a child gets in trouble. Maybe one or both of the birth parents of the child have not acted in a responsible manner, or they're accused of something very serious. In-laws, you know, grandparents are prepared to, or in some cases, the parents of the child are prepared to step into the breach, and the state would rather take a child and put it in foster care than to put it in the care of blood relatives. It's almost like the feeling that if it's with blood relatives, the parents would still have access. Is that something that really needs to be looked at as a case-by-case basis to keep a family together?
You know, I know there's always this philosophy of keeping a family together, but if the family is broken and that child's endangered, then that's not a family. That's not a family. You know, being a parent means more than biologically siring or giving birth to a child. and that's crucial. I can tell you that I have people tell me that they think sometimes children are not removed and placed in foster care or in another one is because of the cost. Mm-hmm. And that's just wrong. I mean, if we're making decisions to let a child stay with an abusive parent while we think they're getting some type of schooling and training to act better and deal with their problems, we're not removing that child because it costs more. That's wrong. That has to stop.
239-1310. 239-1310. That's the news. His name is John Gregg. He is running for the Democratic. No, he's not running for the Democratic. He's unopposed in the primary. He is the Democratic candidate for governor of Indiana. Are you concerned that in parts of Indiana, the Democratic primary is not contested and Democrats are just going to kind of sit and watch what happens on the other side on May 8th?
You know, no, I'm not, because I think what people are talking about is how you're seeing the Republican Party right now trying to fight for its heart and soul. Is it going to be controlled by the reactionary Tea Party people, or are the moderates going to have a voice in it? And I think it's obvious. I think we all know the Tea Party people control it and will continue to. And that's great news for me, because there are moderate Republicans out there that don't want to support it, don't identify with it, and we're going to get their vote.
When we come back, we'll talk about one of the biggest responsibilities of Indiana state government, and that's education, where billions of dollars go not only to higher education but K-12. What would a John Gregg administration do about education? All that and more of your calls this afternoon with Amos for a Tuesday. All right, welcome back. 239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Is back to the phones. And James, hi there.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi.
I want to ask a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to know if your guest could, or would it be, too higher up? People that get, he was talking about cleaning up the system, dealing with the Judge Payne and them. People that get money for kids, for children, would you hold them accountable, like somebody get a child five years old, and then once they turn 17, 18, they kick them out of the house, don't save no money for them? And it's a lot of adopted kids that are homeless, and people have got money for them, but, you know, that child asks, well, where's that money you've been getting for me? And they don't have no answer for them, and a lot of adopted children are homeless.
It's an interesting point.
Yeah, I'm not aware. I haven't heard that before, James. I appreciate that. I'm assuming that money that goes to that care provider, though, is to be spent on the child for, you know, extra housing, food, shelter, isn't it? Or is part of it to be sold? Now, I know if you're getting, we're not talking about a trust fund or a Social Security set aside here, but if it's money from the state, isn't that money to be spent on that child's health and care while they're in that household?
Right, but what I'm saying, you know, once they turn a certain age, that money is cut off, and then, you know, some people, once they, you know, they feel they can get no money, they're not responsible, and they kick the child out. I just want to know, would it be accountability for some kind of savings for that child to, you know, branch out, this case that child don't have a job when you turn 17, 18 and have some money to live somewhere?
You know, that's a valid point. I want to give that some thought. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
I appreciate it. 239-1310, 239-1310. It's afternoons with Amos. John Gregg, in the last 8 years, there has been so much innovation and so much change in K-12 education, actually in education, both K-12 and higher education, that there are some, you know, for example, in the legislature in both parties saying maybe we need to, you know, hold off on any more innovation until we digest all of these changes that have occurred. What is the educational philosophy of a John Gregg, of a Governor John Gregg?
Well, it's pretty simple in some ways. Number one, I am the product of a public school. My mm-hmm. boys attended a public school, and I think that it's real important that our schools be as good as they can be. And I've had people tell me, let's go slow now. We passed a lot of reform. I think, again, if they can be better, and Amos, I've asked teachers from Lake County to Jefferson County, from Vandenberg up to LaGrange County, I said, can our schools be better? They all tell me yes. Mm-hmm. And they all tell me they're willing to be held accountable. They'd like a voice and how they make it better. They would like to have some say in it. But I think there's got to be a realization that we've got to make our K through 12 as good as it can be. Two things that I want to focus on. One is that early childhood, right, that kindergarten and pre-kindergarten. We're missing the boat in this state by not trying to do something, not just kindergarten, but pre-kindergarten. The other thing is we've now got college accessible all across Indiana through Ivy Techs, the university, the state university systems. But the question now has to be affordability. It's got to be affordable, and that's the challenge.
Is it also one of the things that may have to happen in this state that, you know, the next governor has to be a little bit more outgoing in terms of going around the state, talking about what it is they're doing, what they want to do, and getting Hoosiers on your side? Let me give a simple example of that. The legislature, in its infinite wisdom, you know, passed a law that said every Hoosier third grader needs to demonstrate that they can read in third grade. If not, and you can't pass this test and you can't pass the retest, then you're held back a grade. They launched, this was done like 2 years ago, that they were going to do this. Then nobody knew about it until all of a sudden here comes March of this year, and then all of a sudden, oh, there's an iRead test. No effort by the administration, either the superintendent of public instruction, who's an independent statewide elected official, or even at the level of the governor, to start telling Hoosiers, this is serious, this is important, we need to make sure that every Hoosier third grader is reading. What good is having these laws, these rules, these tests, these new procedures, and then you're not out there talking it up so that Hoosiers, parents, grandparents, extended family know what's going on?
You know, you bring up a point. I use the term bully pulpit.
Yeah.
And as governor, I want to be what I call a traveling governor. It's real easy for those in the capital city because of Indianapolis being the largest city, the donut counties, it's the largest metropolitan area. And when you go to the Indianapolis media market, radio, TV, 40% of the state. But we forget there's still 60% of the state out here that at times feels a little disconnected. And here's in part why. Part of it's Louisville-oriented. Part of it's Cincinnati-oriented. Part of it's Chicago-oriented. Then we've got the part that centers around Fort Wayne and Evansville. You know, as governor, I want to use that bully pulpit to go around, talk about issues with citizens all over the state. I want them to know what's going on in state government, and I want to know what they want and expect and need from state government. So that disconnect with Indianapolis needs to stop. And I think one way, I think it makes the system a whole lot better, because then people need to realize that they are the government.
As you've gone around the state, what issues are people bringing up to you that have surprised you, that you have not expected to hear?
You know, the only issue I ever have anybody talk to me about is jobs. I mean, they talk about it first, second, third, and I've said time and time again, any second not spent talking about jobs, and of course education's tied into the job market, is a second wasted. That is all people want to talk about. They don't want to talk about divisive issues. It's that issue.
When we talk about jobs, one of the frustrations that comes out of this community, and I'm sure in other communities across the state, and I'm sure this transcends color, is people who made a mistake. Either they made a mistake when they were young, paid the penalty for the mistake, or maybe they made a mistake 8, 9, 10, 12 years ago. And now they're trying to get their lives back together again. And, you know, they can't catch a break in terms of finding a job. And these are those who are ex-offenders. That's the first group. The second group that's not talked about are those who've been out of work now for a year and a half, 2 years or more, as with some people who are in their 50s, who had, you know, their college degree. They had great careers. They got downsized out of a job, and they're having a devil of a time trying to get back in. As we look at putting Hoosiers back to work, how do we deal with these two different groups of people? One, ex-offenders who are ready to work and nobody will give them a break, or businesses are just so afraid that they'll get sued if they hire an ex-offender. And those who were productive workers who lost their job because of the recession, they've been out of work, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, and they also can't catch a break.
Well, that's a good point. First of all, on those who have been offenders, mm-hmm. you know, the thing is, if they have done their time, so to speak, they paid their debt to society. And if we truly are a nation that forgives, then we need to extend a helping hand and try to help place those people. I know a lot of people of faith all over Indiana that reach out to people like this. So I think it's those people being engaged and involved to let other employers know that, hey, you can find people out here who need a shot, need a break. I think it's getting them involved, telling that story. Number one, is a little bit of it that can help on it, number one. And with this group that you're talking about, a woman comes to, I can see her, I can give you her name, but I won't, from down in Posey County, that's mm-hmm. the Mount Vernon area, right. who 61 years of age, worked her whole life, got downsized by a Fortune 500 company that operates a subsidiary out of Evansville, been out of work 2.5 to 3 years now. COBRA ran out because she got laid off before the president's health plan passed. This woman and women and men like that need to be able to be retrained. And you're going to say, but she's 61. The point is, she can't retire yet. She's got to work. So we need to make sure people like this can be retrained. They can get new skills so they can get back in the job market. For a person that's 50 to 55 and older to lose a job, because we're faced with a day and age now because of Social Security, the high cost of living, people are having to work till they're older. And we need to, and that's a good segment that's got a great work ethic. So if we get more jobs created, those problems will take care of themselves.
Let me go back to Bully Pulpit for a minute. One of the things that has affected people. Now, the legislature tightened this up a little bit with a law that passed on a bipartisan basis that kind of now they want to start regulating background check companies, that background check companies have to do what they need to do. Where is it a moral responsibility of a governor to go to the chambers of commerce in this state, not just the state chamber of commerce, but all the chambers of commerce all around and say, look, we've got great productive workers here that want a chance, that want to do right, that live here in your own community, that want to be taxpayers, not people that are living off of government, and we need you to give them a chance. You know, is that a moral responsibility of a governor to barnstorm like that to try to get, you know, the 5 million Hoosiers that are of working age back to work?
I think it is. And it's not just to those that are past offenders. It's just not to those unemployed. It's to the underemployed. It's to those getting out of high school. It's to those veterans returning. I mean, I think the governor is a combination team captain. Mm-hmm. He is a combination leader, he's on equal footing with everybody. But absolutely, the governor needs to be going around the state delivering a message that we need to be inclusive in Indiana, that we all are in it together. The higher that number of Hoosiers working, more revenues to the state, that makes college affordable, that makes our infrastructure stronger. People are buying cars, people are spending money. I mean, some major differences here between me and my likely opponent. We mentioned the auto industry earlier when we were talking about cars and batteries. Can you imagine Indiana with no automotive industry? Mm-hmm. That also means no steel industry. What would Indiana be without automotive and steel? And yet I'm running against someone who did not believe in the American worker and American businesses by loaning, and it was a loan which has been paid back to Chrysler and GM and saving thousands of jobs, plus all the steelworker jobs, too.
Back to the phones, and Brenda, hi there.
Good day, Amos. Thank you for taking my call today. Mm-hmm. Hello, Mr. Gregg. How are you?
Hi, Brenda. I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, sir, but kind of frustrated. I would like to ask you a question about, are you familiar with the special education process in the state of Indiana?
Somewhat. No, I don't pretend to be an expert in it, but I'm familiar with it.
Well, the rights of children with disabilities who often come from poor and minority backgrounds, they're being excluded from accessing the educational benefits entitled to them under state and federal law.
How is that, Brenda?
Well, for instance, my son is hearing impaired. The school system in the state has known about his hearing loss for years. And even as I provided medical documentation and he failed hearing screenings at the school level, he was being screened out of placement for a child with a hearing impairment. So he was placed in special education with my consent with the hopes of getting him access, but then to be outright denied the services that would have helped him benefit from special ed. So what we have here, Mr. Gregg, is a system that's on its face looks legal because special education is not an illegal practice, but it's the application of services that are being denied which goes against federal and state law. How would you address this, and how would you look into maybe an audit of the special education funding that comes into the state from the Federal Department of Education, and also the tax money that comes into the system to what it's supposed to do is provide these services?
Sure. You know, that's a good question, and I appreciate you asking it. When you mentioned the word audit, that's something that we've been talking about, me and other people, just having discussions. And what brings this to the forefront is if you recall, just a matter of maybe a month, 6 weeks ago, you know, the state found, Brenda, $100 million. $100 million. Now, I got to tell you, I'm a respecter of our governor, but I mean, he gets a lot of breaks, and that was one he got. I mean, if that would have been somebody else or a Democrat, they'd have had a fit. You know, they would have wanted the feds to come in and audit all the books. I think it only makes good sense that we have people come in and look at all state agencies. And it's not just because when you're changing from one governor or one party to the next, I think all state agencies need reviewed periodically. I mean, if I have the fortune to be elected governor and we look at all of these agencies in year one, we don't need to wait till year four or year eight to look at them again. You always need to constantly be looking to see where your money's spent, make sure it's transparent, make sure it's effective.
Can I ask one last question,
real
sir?
Quick, Brenda.
Would you be willing to also get an audit of the state's FSSA, because they provide the contracts to the Medicaid doctors to provide the related services that children need under special education. And this is not taking place, Mr. Gregg.
Yeah, I think, again, Brenda, every federal dollar that comes into the state and every state dollar raised from people like you and me that are tax dollars, we've got to look at all of it, not just FSSA, not just DCS, not just the Board of Health, but that includes NDOT, everything. We've got to look at all of our monies because, again, if our bookkeeping practices are such that we just, oh, here's $100 million, we've got to do some things and figure out how much money we've got, where it is, who's watching it, et cetera.
All right, appreciate the call. A quick question before I take a break, John Gregg. We have an ombudsman in the Department of Correction. We have an ombudsman in the Department of Child Services. Education's a little different because it's under an agency that is run by a statewide independent elected official. Now, it's not a constitutional, superintendent of public instruction is not a constitutional office, which means it could be eliminated by a vote of the legislature. Two questions. One, should we look at some kind of ombudsman for education? I mean, we have so many different education things, whether it's from charter schools and you know, there's so many problems that we hear from parents in terms of the chain of command in charter schools. Obviously, special education is something that is hard for parents who've got PhDs to understand those rules and regulations. Do we need an ombudsman in education, that someone that's independent of the Department of Education, to take complaints, to be an advocate for parents and kids?
The only way an ombudsman would work in that sense, Amos, would be if after they find out what the issue is and they have some suggestions, is there has to be some type of a mechanism to allow that to be implemented. I think it's real important that, you know, somebody like this as a watchdog over a state agency, that's never bad. There may already be somebody in mm-hmm. that position with another state agency. I mean, you've got the State Board of Accounts right. audits money and see where things go. You've got the Office of Solicitor General. We may have that out there now. You've got consumer fraud right. in the Attorney General. You've got the Utility Consumer Counselor. We may have those, and maybe it's an expansion of their jobs. Maybe it's just people doing their jobs. Those are things that are all good ideas that we need to look at.
The other thing is, given the importance of education and the fact that you are the Democratic candidate for governor, Are we going to see, you know, a Democratic candidate for superintendent of public instruction like now and not wait until the 4th of July? Because I think there needs to be somebody out here on the Democratic side starting to talk about these issues.
Well, I think you're going to see that. And I would imagine there are discussions ongoing now. In fact, if you travel a state like I have, you'll hear four or five names. And these names have been out there and have been battered around.
Would you tell them they all need to get in one room and decide who the person is going to be, or draw lots? Or
well, I think they have to decide before July 4th because our convention is in June.
Well, see, I'm trying to get it now. I'm trying to get them to think and decide before Easter. The community would like it. 239-1310 afternoon's names. We'll be back with our remaining moments with John Gregg. Teachers coming up in the second hour. Tomorrow in our second hour, the Marion County Prosecutor's Office will be here. We're going to talk about gangs. And then Thursday, it is the annual AM 1310 The Light Radiothon to benefit St. Jude Children's Hospital. And then Friday, first radio. John Gregg never did this when he was on the radio part-time. First live radio broadcast from the 911 Center.
Wow.
We're gonna find out, what do they do at the 911 Center besides say 911, what's your emergency? And we'll find out about all of that. Next Friday, we'll be out at the Wayne Township School System. It's Afternoons with Amos after these. We're back. 239-1310. 239-1310, it's Afternoons with Amos. Back to the phones, and Tim. Hi there. Tim?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, you're on the air. What's up?
I've been having this real bad problem. I heard Kenny talk about Social Security earlier. I've been going through trying to get my Social Security for the last 4 years, and it's just a big mess. A couple of weeks ago, I called you, and you guys took my number and sent me over to Andre Carson, and they just been giving me the runaround like it ain't. They sent me to a Republican person. And when I called them and told them what I've been going through and told them that Andre Carson sent me over, they literally laughed at me. Like, you know, what? Why are they sending you to me?
And this was applying for Social Security disability?
Yes, sir.
And how many times have you been turned down?
I've been going through this for 4 years now.
How many times have they turned you down?
Twice. I'm in the last appeal thing that I'm in right now, and even when I was in the courtroom with the judge, even their doctors that there said, told the judge that I was disabled, couldn't work.
Who did you talk to in Congressman Carson's office?
Andrea Scott.
You talked to Andrea?
Yep.
And she sent you to, who did she send you to? Senator Lugar's office?
Todd Rokita, something like that.
Whoa, where do you live?
I live in St. Vincent Hospital, but my mailing address, I guess, is in Tom Rakita's thing, because part of my disability is I'm illiterate, so I have my mail sent somewhere else. So when I get my mail, they can just open my mail and read it to me.
Where do you physically live? Give me two cross streets.
86th and Ditch Road.
86th and no, yeah, you're not.
He's
you're not.
He's not in it now.
You're not in Congressman Carson's district.
Oh.
You're in. Goodness forbid, you're in Dan Burton's district.
Hmm.
Yeah. Do this for me, and I understand what Andrea is doing because, you know, again, the priority is, you know, help your constituents in your district.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I want you to do. I want you to give Chris your name and a number where you can get reached during the day. And I'm gonna. There's at least a couple good people over in Dick Lugar's office, Senator Lugar's office. And I will send that information over to her.
I would.
Because Dan Burton ain't going to, you know, tell you the time of day.
I think so.
Neither will Todd Rokita, and you can tell both of them I said that.
Well, I believe it.
Okay. So hold on, all right?
Okay.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you. Let me go to John at 239-1310. Hi, John.
Hi, Mr. Craig.
Hi, John.
I used to talk to you when I used to live up in the Castleton area Saturday mornings, and you disappeared.
I did disappear.
You're getting all your disappear. Fans today.
Hey, what are they going to do about... I've got a question about a curve on U.S. 41 in Knox County. It's at the intersection of U.S. 41 and U.S. Highway 50. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, I sure do. That's Vincennes.
Is where my curve.
Vincennes is where my law office is. What's the issue with it?
I lost a radio in a van. Well, actually, a radio antenna, and it fell off a dashboard.
Did you wait? Hold on. Did you make a police report?
No, the state police were not involved in it.
How did you lose it?
Well, part of it landed on the van floor.
You've lost me. You lost a radio in your van?
I lost part of the antenna on the van floor. You know,
and it's because whose fault was it? Is it the state's fault?
I believe so. The way the curve was constructed.
Then you're on a US 41.
And what US you Highway 50.
Okay, here's what you need to do. You need to. I'm going to give you two places. One, call the Indiana Department of Transportation, NDOT. And then I want you to call in Indianapolis 232-9600,
okay.
232-9600. Tell them where you live, and they will give you the contact information of your state representative.
Okay,
and let your state
I know who that is.
Well, then you need call that number.
I moved from that location over to Harcourt Road. Now I got another question.
Well, I'm running out of time, so I appreciate you, John. I need to move on to Greg. Another Greg for John. Greg at 239-1310. Hi there.
How you doing, Damon?
I'm fine.
Okay, I want to ask your guest a couple of quick questions. First,
okay.
What do you think about the governor talking about he bringing all these jobs here with the right to work bill? And what is the opinion about the current mayor of Indianapolis?
The first one, you know, the whole issue of right to work, I wasn't an advocate of that. And I think, Indiana was a right to work state from 1958 to 1965, and it got repealed. I think that it won't take 8 years this time. I think 3, 4, 5, 6 years over, it's going to take no time at all for people start realizing that that is not the panacea. It's not going to be attracting all kinds of jobs, and definitely not jobs we want. And I think we'll see that at some point, obviously, falling to the wayside, because I don't think it was in the best interest of working men and women, and that we need a strong middle class. And union wages help lift everybody's wages up, whether you belong to a building trades, organized labor or not. Everybody benefits from higher wages if you're an hourly worker. And I did not hear your second question.
Oh, he's asking, what do you think of the mayor of Indianapolis?
You know, I've really not. I've met the mayor a few times to say he knows me or doesn't know me. I will have to tell you one thing. When people tell me, when they come up to me and they say, man, you're running against a well-financed guy who's well-known and he's got contacts, you know, doesn't that scare you? What I think of is Mayor Ballard, because if there was somebody that did the same thing, you know, in 2007, ran against an opponent that outspent him, what, 40 to 1, mm-hmm. something like that, something mm-hmm. outlandish, well-known, well-respected, well-received. He won. I mean, in that sense, I look at him and think, this guy just keeps plugging away, and that's what we're doing.
As you go around the state, are people engaged in this election for governor?
You know, they are. I'll tell you what. The difference, let me say this. The people that have been following it are political junkies like mm-hmm. you and me. But I have seen a noticeable difference since last year when the mayor's race was over. And then once the legislature went out, an incredibly marked difference. The media following it more. The average person on the street talking about it. I am excited, Amos, when I go to events, good crowds. And yeah, people are tuning into it every day. More and more people are tuning into it every day.
And the three candidates that are in this race, Hoosiers want to hear the three of you talk jobs.
Absolutely.
It's not, you know, inside. It's not a lot of inside baseball. of the legislature did this or lawmakers did that. It is how are we going to put Hoosiers back to work? How do we get unemployment down to 4%?
Amos, I'll tell you, I am the one candidate in the group. I've been involved. I owned my first business when I was 15. I've been involved with small business. I've worked for two Fortune 500 companies. My family were in the small business in Linton, Indiana for 50 years. I've been involved with making a payroll. I ran a university. I've got state experience. I'm the one with the experience and the know-how. And fortunately, I'm not a career politician, nor am I a member of Congress. So I think I got a lot going for me.
Obviously, at some point in the fall, there will be, you know, debates.
There need to be a lot of debates.
Oh, you want a lot of them.
We want a lot of them, and they don't need to wait till the fall.
Have you told the debate commission that?
I've not. The debate commission has not contacted me formally, but we're waiting until after the primary. But I think the more debates, the better. We need to have a series of debates or discussions, if you will, or meetings all around the state.
Speaking of that, there is a primary for Democrats. You know, it's the other side, you know, isn't the only ones doing an election. On May the 8th, the last day to update your voter registration, if you've moved since the last time you voted, on Monday, so you can register to vote here at the radio station, 21 East St. Joseph Street, 21 East St. Joseph Street downtown, or you can go downtown to the voter registration office in the city county building. And if people want more information, John Gregg, about your campaign, John Gregg for Governor, Gregg for Governor, how do they get a hold of you?
www.greggforgovernor.com.
www.greggforgovernor.com. And you can tell John Gregg because he has a mustache.
Absolutely.
And all these consultants kept telling you got to get rid of the mustache, but that's not you.
But no, that's not me. I've had it for 35 plus years. If I were going to shave the mustache off, you don't want someone who's going to start changing themselves to be governor. I am who I am.
No Etch-a-Sketch in John Gregg's vocabulary.
No, and you're a handsome-looking man with that mustache, too.
He's working on me. John Gregg, the Democratic candidate for governor of Indiana, thanks very much for being with us.